You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you back here up north on a Thursday morning, September 18th, 2025. Parker Olson is producing the shindig down in Madison Studio A2. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is standing by. So is Trevor Young, a candidate for state senate in the Racine area. We'll talk about his campaign coming up in just a bit. And after 7:30, we will talk to Dr. Kelly Snooks, a pediatrician who is now doing a new video series for Up North News. You can find it on all of our social media feeds and in her newest installment, all about what vaccines actually are and what vaccines actually do. So the doctor is in. The doctor's in your phone. You can call up these videos on the Up North News social media pages any old time. And again, we'll talk to her at 7:35. You can also sign up for our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the top banner. But there's somebody else that's in the newsletter business, and that would be Civic Media. They have a new daily newsletter filled with links to show highlights and more. And theirs is on Substack. So if you go to Substack, I'm sure you can search for Civic Media Today, or just put in this address, civicmediatoday.substack.com, and get signed up for their newsletter as well. Let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot now to talk about a somewhat rainy morning, depending on where you are. Brittany, looking at the radar here, it's like all these little splotches around Shawano Tigerton, around Crandon, around Phillips, somewhere down there near Prairie du Chien. So, I mean, it's not certain at all whether you're going to get rain or not at this point this morning, right?
No, it's really not. I got to be transparent with you. This weekend and the rain and who's going to get it and how much is kind of up on the air at the moment, mm-hmm. because we've got just a really big complex system moving through. So it's really hard to forecast. So what we're looking at this morning is it's about 60 degrees all throughout the state, low to mid upper 60s out there. Spotty showers mainly north this morning as a front is draped across, but that is going to be dropping south through the state today. And then we've also got a low pressure system itself inching closer and closer, expected to move in on Saturday and Sunday, potentially bringing some heavy rainfall to places. So a wet next few days ahead. Just make sure you have that umbrella on standby, or maybe toss the raincoat in the back seat, because you never know when it's going to happen over the next few days. Right now, we are looking at more clouds north. Again, spotty sunshine further south and by Lake Michigan today. Highs will hit about 70 degrees far north. It's still hanging on to some heat south in the mid-80s. And we are looking at more storms sparking up this evening, probably after 5 o'clock or so. Those are going to be widely scattered and then become more numerous as we go through the overnight. I do think it's going to target more north and central in the state before it starts to move south later on into the weekend. So tomorrow it'll be mostly cloudy. It'll become breezy as well. Highs still hit 70 up north, 80 down south, and more showers and storms into the afternoon and night. And then it really ramps up, like I said, into the weekend. Highs will drop to about 65 north and stay at about 80 south for the weekend.
So another way to put it is thoughts and prayers to Jeep owners everywhere who have to keep the top up, have to keep the doors on, I suppose, for campers and everybody else too, but mostly for Jeep owners.
Mostly for Jeep. I know.
Brittany and I,
we want to single yourself out, guys.
Yep. We want the open air driving. It's just going to have to wait. Things are a little too spotty. Thank you, Brittany. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Hey, let's turn right into the 2026 campaign, because it's been a busy week. We had two different candidates for governor announce. You know, we had State Representative Francesca Hong here on the program yesterday. State Senator Kelda Royes announced her candidacy on Monday, and she will be here on our show next Monday morning to talk more about her run for governor. We had Corrine Hendrickson on yesterday, breaking the news officially that she's running for state senate over in southwest Wisconsin. And now we have a state senate candidate in southeast Wisconsin to introduce to you. His name is Trevor Young. He is a former member of the Racine City Council and is running for the seat currently held by Republican Van Wongard. Trevor Young, how are you? Good morning.
Pat, I feel good. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, it's nice to have you here as well, running in the Racine area, 21st Senate District. And so let's talk a bit about your own story getting to this point, and then we'll talk about the race itself. But and for folks on the radio, his last name is spelled J-U-N-G, and you can learn more at TrevorYoung.com. Again, Trevor, J-U-N-G.com, and learn about his state Senate campaign. But tell us first a bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'll start at the beginning. So I was actually born halfway across the world, and I was adopted from an orphanage in Russia when I was two. And so my dad, who's a fourth generation Racinian and small business owner, raised me and made a life in Racine. And as a product of the public schools and my neighborhood, I grew up with this real sense of gratitude. You know, wow, life could have been a whole lot different had my dad made a different choice. And so, you know, being so grateful for my family's love and also so grateful for my community, I grew up with a sense of wanting to give back. So went off to university to study urban studies and urban planning because I thought, you know, what can I do for my hometown? You know, these are local, you know, issues that we can address. There's a lot of potential where I'm from. And so I came back after university and ran for city council. So served two terms on the city council, elected twice, and then was hired on to the city to be the transit director because a passion of mine is transportation, making sure people can get to where they need to go. Doctor's appointments, work, school, because, you know, mobility really equals freedom, making sure that people can be self-reliant and support themselves and their families. So we've done a lot of really exciting things in Racine, but I've also seen how the state, instead of being an ally in good work and making sure people can support themselves and have that independence, has been an adversary in gutting shared revenue, which is state support for local government, going after public education, making it harder for urban and rural school districts to be able to get the resources that their students need to be able to have the skills to grow up and contribute. And so what's inspired me is that I want to see Southeast Wisconsin be a real destination where people who are skilled can make a life here, and then people who are raised here and have you know, quality education can stay.
We're talking to Trevor Young, a candidate for state senate in the Racine area, and it's very interesting that you mentioned the transportation issues, because while Van Wongard is the current senator for that area, the previous senator, John Lehman, I served with him, you know, years ago. And one of the things that John Lehman and I and other legislators were working on were these regional transit authorities in ways to enhance regional transportation, to make the different modes more in sync, trains and buses and everything, rather than just trying to, you know, pave our way to less traffic, which is never going to be the full answer. So all these years later, with former Governor Scott Walker killing the train system, and Republicans still just going full in on you know, cars, and nothing but cars. It's interesting that you're still tapping into a public sentiment that says we need a more comprehensive transit solution.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're, you know, I remember that there was a political slogan that said open for business. And if you're open for business, you need to invest in multimodal transportation, because if you want to attract the next generation of skill, which then brings about major employers to say that they want to locate in your community, that's going to take more than just one type of transportation option. I mean, this is about options, you know, whether it's public transportation, whether it's passenger rail, whether it's, you know, in your own vehicle. You know, we need to make sure that all of these systems work, because that's what makes the region most competitive. I'll tell you a story. So we're right between Milwaukee and Chicago. That's the third largest economic region in the United States. That's the 10th largest economic region in the world. Yet the city where I hail from, Racine, you know, struggles with stubborn poverty and unemployment. And that's because we're the largest city furthest away from an interstate highway. And so for us, it's even though we're in the heart of this economic region, we need to do a better job connecting our residents and folks who live in District 21 to opportunity within the corridor. And so, you know, that's a all hands on deck moment for us to get the answer right so that we grow Southeast Wisconsin.
It's been clear from the remarks made by Van Wongard, who has not yet officially stated if he's going to run for another term or not. But I mean, it is the usual playbook. You are a Madison, California liberal, raising taxes, boys and girls locker rooms, more San Francisco than Milwaukee. I'm not seeing anything original here. So I'm guessing you're probably prepared for all of these talking points and more that are going to come up during the campaign.
Yeah, I imagine that statement was crafted well before anybody announced they were running for this seat. So I've never lived in Madison. I've never lived in San Francisco. I've always lived in Southeast Wisconsin, whether it was going to UW-Milwaukee for my undergrad or always, you know, living in Racine. And so I think that this campaign is going to be a lot different in terms of tone. If they're going to take the tact that, you know, insults and, you know, following national partisan narratives is the way that they're going to address issues, what we're going to do is talk about issues like affordability, good paying jobs, making sure that those who are the most vulnerable have the services that they deserve, making sure that, again, local governments have the resources that they need. You know, that's a huge element of public safety. Our police and fire departments are all municipal employees, so we have to make sure that we're providing safe, thriving communities. And that's what our campaign is going to be focused on. So that will be the big difference.
And of course, now Wisconsin has fairer maps instead of the gerrymandering that essentially drove John Lehman out of that seat. So the 21st district now is some of the north side of Racine, Caledonia, Raymond, parts of southern Milwaukee County, including Greenfield, Franklin, and Hales Corners. So talk to me about the winnability of that district for a Democratic candidate like you.
Thank you, Pat. I think we can win this thing. We're going to work hard. We're going to earn every vote. It is an ideal district for a healthy democracy in that it's a 50-50 district. So you've got to have the better ideas. You've got to communicate that boldly and connect with people. And so we're feeling really good about this campaign. Governor Evers won the district. Senator Baldwin won the district. All of the judicial candidates in the last several cycles have won overwhelmingly in this district. President Biden won this district. Vice President Harris won this district. So we feel really good about this. It's always going to be tight, and you're going to have to work hard. But I think that the wind is at our backs, and we're going to have a positive campaign focused on the issues that people care about.
And then finally, of course, we've got to talk about the how did Van Wongard put it? I will not make my opponent's youthfulness and inexperience an issue in this race. This actually sounds more like a passing the torch moment. I mean, in terms of folks of your generation being willing to step up and not just have the apathy that, say, my generation had at your age.
Yeah, no, that statement even echoed, I think, Ronald Reagan Walter Mondale. You know, and so if we're talking about a different generation, we're definitely deciding on it on a new way. So the old way hasn't worked. Austerity, defunding our public services, defunding public schools, you know, a race to the bottom so that we fight for scraps outside of Madison. That has not worked. Wisconsin is the third most left, or the bottom third of states where people are leaving. And that's not right because we have beautiful natural amenities and we've got great communities. And so a better vision means a winning campaign.
That's right. All right. To learn more about Trevor Young, TrevorYoung.com. And over at Facebook, look for Trevor Young for State Senate. Trevor, great to meet you. Safe travels. Thanks for stopping in and telling us a bit more about your campaign.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it.
All right. We appreciate you stepping up and running like that and for visiting with us today. Dr. Kelly Snooks is still coming up. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The The Milwaukee Brewers were winners yesterday over the Los Angeles Angels. 9-2 was the final. Brandon Woodruff looked good, pitched five innings, gave up only two hits and one run, nine strikeouts. Sal Frelick hit a three-run homer. Blake Perkins had a career-high five RBIs. And the two teams will face off one more time. The third and final game of the series is this evening at American Family Field, 6:05. The pregame coverage begins on several Civic Media radio stations. Well, I've made it this long, but we couldn't resist or stay away from the trouble. I mean, the seriously constitutional trouble that is Congressman Derek Van Orden. And I really have to tip my cap to my old colleagues at WEAU Channel 13 in Eau Claire, because I have picked on them. I have picked on Channels 18 and 19 in Eau Claire and La Crosse. I have picked on WKBT Channel 8 for their coverage of Derek Van Orden, which has been, over the past, you know, 2+ years, pretty soft when it comes to just covering, you know, when he shows up on a farm and tours the farm and gets to talk about how, you know, I'm just here fighting for the farmers, when there's nothing in his record that indicates that. And there's been very little said about his belligerence and, frankly, conduct unbecoming a congressman. But he has definitely crossed a line, and I'm very happy that the folks at Channel 13 took note of that and reached out to the congressman to talk about all of the threats that he's been making on social media, and celebrating the times that people have been fired and threatening to defund places, including cities like Eau Claire in his district, because he does not like how people have expressed themselves over the Charlie Kirk murder, which, by the way, they have a right to do, unless you're Derek Van Orden, who has taken a U.S. law, a federal law about domestic terrorism, and he now views it through the prism of saying anything critical about Charlie Kirk or, frankly, Republicans or the president equates with domestic terrorism. You don't believe me? Give a listen to this bit of an excerpt from the WEAU 13 News report, talking to Derek Van Orden and trying to start by asking him about all these posts from people who were expressing opinions. But that in and of itself is not threatening language. That is not domestic terrorism. But listen to how condescending Derek Van Orden gets with the reporter about that.
We asked the congressman about these posts, saying they don't seem to be calling for violence. Here's what he said.
I'm going to say this one more time. If you look up the U.S. code and read it, it is crystal clear that what they are saying falls under this U.S. statute. So it's a little frustrating when I have clearly intelligent people like yourself who can read, that you don't do your homework before you conduct this interview.
That was a congressman saying that. Now, I'm not surprised, but I hope a few people are, that have finally heard that this is how this guy actually talks. This is how this guy actually acts. Now, let me take care of the personal part first, the jackassery that is Derek Van Orden, when he says, you know, clearly intelligent people like yourself who you can read, but you don't do your homework. I mean, apart from that being a jerk move, the premise on which he bases those insults is completely flawed. And of course, note how he can't defend it. He just says, well, if you read the code, it is crystal clear that what they're saying falls under this statute. And the reporters ask him again and again to connect the dots. What is it about this language in this statute that indicates that this is somehow against the law, that this is somehow threatening behavior, that this is somehow, you know, providing resources for terrorist acts rather than a mere expression of opinion? And he can't do it. He can't do it. He's asked repeatedly. And if you go to another clip of the interview where Bob Gallagher is trying to get him to clarify his statement, he just talks over Bob. It's, again, this is part of the Ron Johnson, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance school, is you just talk over the person so much that they finally give up trying to ask the question. But they don't answer the question. They know the question that's being asked of them. Prove that this is somehow actual threatening behavior, much less domestic terrorism. And they can't do it. But they've got power right now, and they're using it. Again, when Derek Van Orden uses social media to insult and belittle people, well, that just makes him a jerk. But He's a member of Congress. He's part of the government. The First Amendment says the government shall not infringe on freedom of speech. But that's what he, as part of the government, wants to do. And he does not like being called out for it. But he's got the power. And it's only it's a sense of power that's only going to grow. It's an ego that's only going to grow. It's condescension that's only going to grow with the news that yesterday ABC capitulated, surrendered, kowtowed, bent the knee, and pulled Jimmy Kimmel off the air. By the way, not for something he said. Do not fool yourself into thinking that ABC pulled him for the specific thing that they say that he said. Now, we could talk about the remark. I'm not going to. You go look at the remark, and you look in there, and you see, again, what is it that is so over the line that it's worth even a day's suspension, much less being pulled off the network indefinitely. It's not about what Jimmy Kimmel said. It's what Brendan Carr, the head of the FCC, a Donald Trump loyalist, said in threatening ABC, and prior to that, threatening CBS, and prior to that, threatening other media. The head of the FCC, which licenses broadcast stations right now, is not in any way, shape, or form independent or looking out for the freedom of broadcasters and their First Amendment rights to share expressions in the arena of ideas. Brendan Carr, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Derek Van Orden, and others are in the business right now of trying to silence critics through intimidation, through prosecution, through fear, and through falsehoods. And corporate America just gave up again with another late night comic. And they're not going to stop there until more people, including the people at some of these corporations, finally begin pushing back and standing up for themselves and for our Constitution. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. Tomorrow, of course, we'll have our regular Week in Review panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze, Courier Newsroom's Kia Vakil, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Mike Clemens with sports, Brittany Merlot's weekend forecast. Just a lot to tune into tomorrow. If you can't stick around, then put us on a podcast. Head over to Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure you follow Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today, a federal committee that recommends vaccine policy for Americans is going to start meeting to review immunizations that have been in use for a very long time. It's called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, and it's expected to vote on shots for COVID and hepatitis B, as well as others. And of course, as we've talked about, the Health Secretary, Robert Kennedy Jr., has frequently baselessly questioned the safety of these vaccines. And yesterday, you'll recall, we played a clip from Senator Tammy Baldwin talking to Susan Menarez, who was ousted as head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention after less than a month, because Menarez says Kennedy directed her to commit in advance to approving everything this ACIP board is about to recommend, regardless of the scientific evidence. With this ongoing campaign trying to undermine public faith in vaccines, it's worth going back to basics and finding out just what vaccines are, what it is that makes them work the way that they do. And that fits right in the wheelhouse of pediatrician Dr. Kelly Snooks, who is beginning a new video series for Up North News called Raising Wisconsin. And her latest installment, which was posted yesterday, talks all about vaccines. We're going to give a listen to that before we talk live with Dr. Kelly Snooks.
Hey, Wisconsinites, have you ever wondered exactly what's happening inside your body after you get a vaccine? Like, how is it working to protect you? I'm Dr. Kelly Snooks, board-certified pediatrician, and you're here with this week's Raising Wisconsin. Now let's talk about how vaccines actually work. The vaccines we get today protect us against so many viruses and bacteria, and each vaccine contains what we call an antigen for the disease that it's meant to protect you against. It might be a weakened or killed part of that germ, or even a tiny piece of its genetic material. These antigens essentially mimic the illness, and they sound an alarm to your body's immune system. Your immune system creates what we call antibodies against that particular virus or bacteria. That way, the next time your body encounters the actual illness, it's like, wait a minute, I know what to do with this. Then the antibodies that you've stored up thanks to that vaccine spring into action and prevent that virus or bacteria from making you severely ill. It's your body's way of building a powerful defense without having to get really sick first.
That again is Dr. Kelly Snooks, who joins us now to talk about the Raising Wisconsin series she's doing for Up North News. Dr. Snooks, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. So nice to have you here and have you doing this series for us. We're going to talk much more generally about the series, but with vaccines in the news lately, I just wanted to check, certainly with my wife being a physician, I'm imagining that you, like her, have probably had that basic vaccines 101 conversation more so recently maybe than in years past. It's always been a thing, helping parents understand vaccines, but understanding how vaccines work seems to be much more in the public consciousness these days.
Yeah, you know, I think there has been a lot of discussion about vaccines lately, as we've seen with what's going on today. And I think that people are starting to get a lot of information and misinformation and really starting to question what is real and what is not. So these conversations about how vaccines work, what do they actually protect us against, have become far more common now than they were when I was even just doing general pediatrics during my residency training.
And yes, obviously it's part of the world that we live in now. There's a lot more information, therefore misinformation. And even if it's not misinformation, again, I think every doctor winces when a patient comes in and they got a referral from Dr. Google. And Dr. Google said, here's what you have. And then you have to maybe explain that it that may not necessarily be the case. So let's be sympathetic to the patients there. We're surrounded by more information than ever before. So what kind of guidelines do you like to offer your own patients when it comes to what they read and hear versus what they could hear through a visit to your office?
Yeah, you know, I think there's reassurance, right? That, like you had said, there's so much information at their fingertips and they're not wrong to be concerned and look up this information to try and help them understand things a little bit better. I think when it comes to having those conversations with patients, you know, we in medical school go through so much training on how to actually understand what studies have been gone through rigorous testing, you know, what is some of the evidence that actually works to show that these treatments or vaccines, for example, are safe versus those that, you know, are maybe not as safe, or what studies are out there that are the ones that people are getting a hold of and being concerned about, that actually those studies are not as rigorous or actually have some really big flaws to them. So, you know, I think it's just that reassurance that you're okay to look this stuff up, but let's kind of go over what is the actual evidence behind these treatments or recommendations that we're giving you.
Yeah, exactly. And go through it together, go through the information, because, and this is the awkward part to bring up, but it certainly reminds us of the early months of the pandemic. Science, researchers, doctors, they're not infallible. And as we learned early on in the COVID pandemic, we were still learning our way through that. But that's not the same as being uninformed. It's simply taking you where the science takes you to next. And so lest listeners are saying, oh, there goes another physician and another physician spouse with some kind of a, you know, superiority complex or whatever. No, there's still things we don't know out there. But the alternative is not to just go based on innuendos and rumors and things like that, right?
Right. You know, one of the things that I think we call ourselves in medicine is lifelong learners, because medicine is constantly evolving. But the reason that it's evolving is because, you know, science has advanced so much over the past couple of centuries. I actually talk about that in one of my past videos. But the way that science is evolving, the way that these studies are going on, you know, we are also learning, and our recommendations might be changing because of new evidence that we have learned from new studies or new treatments that are out there.
We're talking to Dr. Kelly Snooks. She's a pediatrician and is doing a video series for Up North News called Raising Wisconsin, which leads to this question. Doctors are busy people. You guys have been studying forever. You work in these long days. And now you're doing a video series, and you've been making videos on the internet for some time now. You're not the only doctor doing it, but can you talk to us about why you decided to get onto social media to start bringing these information to folks when, you know, you could have just sat in an office with a clipboard all day, but you've decided to be more proactive. What motivated you?
Yeah, you know, I think social media is a tool that you realize that you can reach so many people. I am a pediatric intensive care unit doctor, so I am seeing really sick kids, and a lot of what I'm seeing is actually preventable. So one of the first ways that I took to social media was actually for gun violence prevention because of what I was seeing at the bedside. And I think social media is one of those unique tools that can bring people together to connect, but then also has this reach that you can't even imagine, like how far your videos are actually going and being seen. And I think it's another way for us to just spread information and awareness about what is going on in the world, what's going on in public health. And as a pediatrician, public health and almost all these policy changes actually impact child health in a way that I don't think people can maybe understand or see. So it's my goal to kind of break that down and say, hey, here's what's actually going on, and here's how this can actually impact children.
What kinds of things would you like to emphasize in the Raising Wisconsin series? Things that either you've already done to start the series or things that you hope to do in the near future?
Yeah, so things that we've already done. So we have a few videos that are already out. One is just about like traveling safe during the summer. You know, people are hitting the road, they are flying, airplanes are full of germs. So how do you stay safe when you're flying? And then also the history of vaccines is another one that's been out there. So where did vaccines come from in the first place? We go through the details of the overlap between the cowpox virus and the smallpox virus back from the 1700s. So we go into detail on that. And then the one that you had just recently played about how vaccines actually work. It's not going to be all about vaccines. We're also going to cover other topics as well. Seasonal allergies will be coming up, how to stay safe in the car as far as car seats and safety go, bug bites, things along those lines. So everything from general health and wellness about children to some of the stuff that's going on. And I would like to know what other people want to see too, really addressing viewers' comments too, to try and get on those topics.
Yeah, that's been a real focus of the videos, is inviting people to share their own questions that can be addressed later on in the series. Dr. Kelly Snooks is with us. Tell us a bit about your own background and where you grew up, what led you to become a physician and go to med school.
Yeah, so I am originally from the South Side of Chicago. You know, grew up a little girl that I think just was, you know, that basic, I think I want to be a doctor when I grow up, and I stuck with it. I chose pediatrics and did my pediatrics training on the South Side of Chicago because, you know, children really don't have that much impact on their health in the future. A lot of the decisions that we make as an adult impact how they end up in the future. And I think that as a pediatrician, we have that unique ability to advocate for our patients to ensure that they can live healthy and fulfilling lives in the future. So that's why I chose pediatrics and went through that. I did medical school and my pediatrics training in Chicago, and then came up here to Milwaukee for my ICU training and have been here ever since. So yeah, that's why I kind of went that route.
And in working as a pediatrician, and you talk about the things that you've seen in the ICU, and so many times they are preventable. And we did, again, share some of the audio from people who, including the former chief medical officer of the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Howery. And the soundbite concluded talking about, you know, how many more children are getting the measles and sometimes getting complications and sometimes dying unnecessarily, and that we're seeing that uptick. And we're in a state here in Wisconsin, which I think would shock a lot of people, that when it comes to measles immunizations heading into kindergarten, our rate is low enough now that it doesn't meet the standard for what's called herd immunity. So can you talk a bit about just measles and kids and getting up to date on those vaccinations and the danger if that vaccination rate sinks as low as it has in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think since the time that I've been in Wisconsin or in Milwaukee, and that's since 2018, you know, we've had already two measles outbreaks. And like you said, our vaccination rates are really low in Milwaukee, below that herd immunity. Basically, that herd immunity rate is that enough people are protected against measles that if one individual were to get the measles, the rest of the community is protected enough that we will likely be able to overcome that and we won't see a large outbreak. Measles can be very scary when children get it. It can cause, you know, brain damage and ultimately death from that measles virus. And that's why we emphasize so much those kindergartners, you know, and actually even younger, you get it at 1 year to start getting that measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine to protect themselves against these severe illnesses that they can get. And the risk is actually to those that are even younger. So if you think about the children that are under one that haven't been immunized yet against the measles, mumps, and rubella, those individuals are even more so at risk because when we don't have that herd immunity, then they also don't even have the chance to get themselves vaccinated yet. There are some unique circumstances, so I recommend everybody talking to their pediatrician about that if you're under a year old and want to get your child vaccinated against the measles.
Absolutely. And again, for more, you can check out the Raising Wisconsin video series on the Up North News social media feeds and send in your questions as well that Dr. Kelly Snooks can use for a future video installment. Kelly, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for all you do. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for having me, you as well.
All right. Good to have you here. Coming up in our next hour, we will talk to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets and what does it really mean that the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates a little bit yesterday as the economy sits on the verge of stagflation. Plus, Joe Zepecki and more. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Well, it's another busy day of quality programming across the Civic Media Radio Network. Let me tell you about it, and I'm going to work the other way this time. I'm going to start at the end of the day and work my way up. Actually, it's going to be completely disjointed, and you'll see why. But Nightlight Tonight with Pete Schwabba includes the Popcorn Pick of the Week with writer Victoria Davis. Mike Clemens will be along to talk about sports. On Maggie Dawn's show this afternoon from 4 to 6, at 4:35, she will be talking to Robert Benson, who is the Associate Director for National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress. Matinair on Air follows this fine program from 9 to 11. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach will be talking to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel at 9:35 this morning. And at 10:35 with J.R. Radcliffe, Journal Sentinel sports reporter. So again, that's Matinair on Air from 9 to 11. And I can hear you now going, well, didn't you forget somebody? I mean, I know Jimmy Kimmel, you know, is out there. Did they finally get Todd Alba too? No, he's here. We were just saving it for last. Todd will have,
you know,
Representative Francesca Hong on this afternoon at 2:35, new candidate for governor. If he isn't canceled between now and then, and you know, that's always up to, you know, forces beyond ours, but I have Todd pretty good faith in civic media management that they're not going to be surrendering to Donald Trump anytime soon.
Well, you hope not. You hope not. You got the great first to get State Rep Hong on yesterday. Great interview, and we're looking forward to chatting with her today at 2:35. And then at 3:35, Keegan Kelly of Cracked.com, who was just on a few weeks ago talking about the cancellation of Colbert, is back today to talk about the latest situation with Jimmy Kimmel. And I know you talked about it earlier in the show, so don't need to rehash all of it, but
Okay. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, a few people have been awakened since that time, and I told you off air. I said it and jokingly about, you know, I didn't think I'd be in the business of defending Jimmy Kimmel because I would be much more likely to watch Stephen Colbert, or sometimes Jimmy Fallon if I don't want anything controversial at all to be said. But Jimmy Kimmel's a good guy. He's funny, and as I've made clear, let's not kid ourselves. He was not canned, and he probably is going to be canned, but I'm jumping to conclusions here. No, but not for anything that he said. Right. And Donald Trump gave away the game with a tweet afterwards that called on NBC to fire Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon. Again, without pointing to anything that they said. They're just trying to turn everything into, if not state-run media, then media that is afraid of the state.
Well, this is right out of the playbook, and our friend Trivi Olson can speak to this, but it's right from Viktor Orban, and where you get rid of dissenting voices, not because they're inciting violence, but because they're challenging the authority of the people in elected office. And I think it's really, really dangerous. I saw the Jimmy Kimmel clip, for which he was allegedly suspended over for. He didn't say anything that I literally played part of the clip myself on our show last week, the part where Trump was getting ready to go off to Europe. And one of the Fox reporters, I believe, said, "Mr. President, sorry for your loss about your friend Charlie Kirk. How are you doing?" And with a smile on his face, he said, "I think I'm doing well. And by the way, right over here is the new ballroom that we're doing." Yeah. And so Kimmel played that after he said, you know, look, MAGA is trying to do everything they can to get this shooter, convince people they had nothing to do with MAGA. There's nothing, in my opinion, disrespectful about that. Kimmel was simply putting the truth out there, and it's very dangerous times, in my opinion. As you said, now he's calling on Fallon and Seth Meyer to go as well.
Right.
I do think, I mean, you've been in broadcasting, Pat. You've sat behind the anchor desk at EAU in Eau Claire. I think civic media is licensed, because here's the thing, people like broadcast television, ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates, and radio, commercial over-the-air radio stations have to be licensed by the FCC. Places like MSNBC, cable does not, right, or podcasting does not. I don't think it's out of, you tell me, Pat. Are we reaching the point where, as we reach a new gubernatorial election, and shows like you and mine on this network are rightfully critical of MAGA people in office or running for office, and just for craps and giggles, they go to the FCC chair and say, get rid of civic media. And they threaten all the broadcast licenses of this network.
Well, and if not threaten the license, then go to either owners or investors. Again, in the case of Kimmel, is that you had these two big groups like Nexstar and what's the other one, Sinclair. And yep, these have ownerships that are, you know, equally in bed with Donald Trump. And so they're the ones who are making these decisions. I'll say this much about licensed outlets like these. Because of the time we live in, they can try to come after licenses. But thanks to the interwebs and thanks to, you know, good old American ingenuity and rebelliousness, we haven't used this term for a while. But if they come after licenses, get used to this term, pirate radio.
Yeah,
you're going to see,
I'm not, if they laughing, come after license.
Yep, you're going to see unlicensed stations popping up and internet stations that are popping up. If they think they can somehow silence dissent through this campaign of intimidation and legal maneuvers, they're sadly mistaken. And you can just feel the votes trickling away in 2026 as more moderates see this and go, hold on, I'm no Democrat, but I'm also not a fascist, and we're not going to be doing this. We're not going to be, you know, pulling people's broadcast licenses for just being opposed to the ruling party. That's not how it goes here in America.
No better person I like to be on a pirate radio pontoon boat with in Lake Wissota than Pat Kreitlow. That's right. It's Kreitlow and All Ball Pirate Pontoon Radio from Lake Wissota, goodness, in the future.
I don't know. I've seen what Trump and J.D. Vance like to do to boats. Yeah, I mean, granted, they're coming from Venezuela, but I don't know. They might do. They could try that on Lake Wissota. Let me workshop this. See if there's an appropriate place where we can put the pontoon. Thank you, Todd Alba. I got here in your Brewers playoff gear, a Meredith on Facebook saying, or YouTube saying, Todd's so fancy in the morning.
Sounds like I
have a date. I have a date at 2 p.m. Meredith writes.
Oh, fantastic. So there you go. I'm just excited. Six games, magic number to win the NL Central.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you, Mr. Alba. See you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We've got Sean O'Malley, Chad Holmes, and Joe Sapecki all coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.